welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Today's episode is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. It's the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef since 1865. I was off by a whole, century? The Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that is as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more info, go to HearstRanch.com. Today's episode of The Food Scene. Lucky enough to have Grace Bonney of Design Sponge and her wonderful husband, Aaron Coles. Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I think I already got teased, unwittingly teased, when you asked me, how do you know about Design Sponge? And I said, well, my girlfriend told me so. How often is that a response?
I would say if I'm asking a guy, I would say about 99.9% of the time, that tends to be their response. It's either a wife, a husband, or a sister.
Yeah, but you know how many dudes actually read. I mean, you have almost 200,000 followers on Twitter. What is your subscribership to, you know, your RSS feed to your website?
I think we have over 100,000 RSS followers, and we have like over 70,000 readers a day just on the main site. So it's a nice following. It is primarily the ladies, though.
Yeah. Well, two things. Both you and Aaron work full-time on Design Sponge now, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay, let's talk about 2003, when this was just a glimmer in your eye. You originally went to school for journalism at NYU.
Well, I have sort of a random college path, which looking back now makes a lot of sense, but I went to NYU for a year and a half and studied journalism, hated the school, loved the city. So I moved back to Virginia, where I'm from, and I finished up with a fine art degree at the College of William & Mary and graduated and thought, good God, none of this makes any sense at all. What do you do with 2 years of art and 2 years of beginning
I'm a jack of
journalism?
All trades, and exactly. I'm hireable.
Exactly. But I had done a radio show, so I decided to try my hand at music, and I worked for a record label for a year and found out very quickly that I was not meant for the music industry.
What do you mean by that?
It was just not for me. I worked for a small label, which was awesome, and I ended up working with Mike Gordon from Phish on his solo album.
That's awesome, yeah.
And, which was a really cool experience, but I think that the whole thing was just quite a scene, and it was a little overwhelming for me. So I decided to go back to art, my other big passion, and got the first job I could, which was in PR, actually. And so that's how I started meeting writers and editors at magazines, and that's when I realized that was what I wanted to do. And it was Aaron's idea to actually start the blog.
You're welcome. You're supposed to say you're welcome.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
Now, when that transition was happening, you said you were meeting writers and artists that kind of inspired you. What kind of writers and artists? Were you mainly oriented in the design world, or was it fine arts? Or
Primarily design. I think I've always been sort of a home product design person. I think I love and appreciate fine art, but the site has always been way more about products and furniture than it has like traditional fine art. But I was working with like the Borelex and some really amazing sort of big time designers that do like big fancy expensive furniture. None of these things I actually own in my own home. But just super inspirational. Almost a lot of the work they did is primarily sort of conceptual or like large like hospitality installations, things that you can never really have at home. But it blew my mind because nobody teaches that in college.
Yeah.
No one shows you obscure French designers. So getting exposed to that and seeing people whose primary job was to just write about how cool that was seemed like the greatest job ever.
Yeah, yeah. And then in 2003-2004, Design Sponge was born. Now, how was it born? How was that transition actually handled? Did you just say one day, I quit everything, I'm going to sit at my house and start blogging?
No, I don't know any bloggers that do that anymore. I think it was a very slow, gradual thing. I started the blog really quickly. Aaron and I had brunch in Williamsburg back when we used to live there, and we were talking about, I think I was probably blithering about how much I liked the design of the restaurant, and Aaron said, you know, you should really take all this stuff that you're interested in and turn it into a blog, and maybe you could use it as like an application to write for a magazine one day. And so that's how it started overnight. And eventually over the years it became sort of the magazine that I hoped I could write for. And so I didn't leave my job till 2006, I think.
Yeah, it was a couple years for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
So, do you remember that brunch? Do you remember which restaurant it was that you said I love the interior?
It was Union Picnic.
It was Union, I think, at that point. It was at one point Union Picnic, and then
and
they
Union
changed
Star?
Their name. It might have also been Union Star. But it's no longer there. Yeah, it doesn't exist. No. It was great.
Yeah.
It was just like an old school Williamsburg place where we would get like chicken and waffles.
Elvis
sort of.
Waffles.
Yeah. Oh, the Elvis toast.
Elvis toast, that's it.
And it was a fantastic restaurant.
Free Bloody Marys with brunch, wasn't it?
I don't know if they were. You know what they
I
were.
Think they were
they
free,
did have free,
which is more the reason it should still be around.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's the reason why they're no longer.
Exactly.
$100,000 in Bloody Marys. Williamsburg, 2003, 2004 was this hotbed,
epicenter of design.
Well, I mean, what was happening? Who was there? Who was
everything?
Who were the movers
I mean,
and shakers?
Primary, you know, the Pied Piper of Williamsburg design, Dave Alhada for the Future Perfect. Yeah. I think a lot of people sort of are like, oh, over the Future Perfect at this point. But he really was responsible for pulling together all that like disparate group of designers and saying, these people rule. You should be paying attention to them. I'm going to rep them. I'm going to support them. And he put them on the map. And it sort of blew up after that. And that style of like using reclaimed things and celebrating things that look, like a takeout containers, that became all the rage. And now you see that at like, Crate and Barrel. And it's a big thing.
And with the Nomer Brooklyn, aesthetic.
Oh, you can just put the word Brooklyn on it. Yeah. People are like, ooh, that must make it cool.
Jeez. So 2004 to 2006, you were still incubating Design Sponge, but there was a big hit in New York Times when you were mentioned in the home section. What was the article specifically about?
It was sort of the best and worst piece of press you could ever hope for as a blogger. It was a story about how design blogs were sort of becoming a thing, and they interviewed a couple different bloggers, all of which are still around, Maxwell Department Therapy and Harriet Moco Loco. And I think because I was the girl, I got to be the person on the cover of the section, and I had heard from the writer who wrote it that it was going to be this nice piece, and then somehow it ended up the Times decided to allege that I was being paid to write what I write about because I worked for a PR firm.
Yeah, and you were like, I wish.
I know, and it was so funny because my boss was actually really angry that I kept the blog because she was worried that the things I said would be associated with the company that she ran. So it was actually a bad thing for her, and she did not want anything to do with the blog. So long story short, I got my first taste of what it's like to have somebody say something about you publicly that has repercussions. So I spent the first year of my blog obsessing about being as transparent and honest as possible. So I think it really set actually a very good tone going forward to remember to always tell everybody anything they could possibly need to know about you to give them that choice, whether it bothers them or not.
So, I mean, what is the model of being transparent? How do you approach your style of journalism, separate from others?
I mean, I think that it's funny because today we actually were doing this whole series and we write a column called the Biz Ladies series, which is all about free business advice. And we're talking about blogging ethics for the next couple of weeks, which is not something people ever do not put the word ethics and blogging together normally in sentences. But because of what happened to me in 2004 or 2005 when that came out, I take all that stuff really seriously. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think that people are trying harder to make sure they credit things, that they don't copy people, that they're honest about if they're paid to do something, if they get a free sample, all the sort of standard stuff that you would assume people would disclose.
It's like slander and libel went out of the window in the 80s. And
Or like payola from the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really did. I mean, there's so many sites where they get things for free. And the whole strategy is send a blogger something free.
Yeah.
They'll probably write about it. And usually they don't say that they got it for free. They're like, oh, I just got this new, whatever thing. Look how cool it is. And people are like, oh, that's so cool. And it's an endorsement.
Yeah.
And, it's just free publicity for the person, for the brand. And it's a free object for the blogger.
In full disclosure, have you ever received anything for free?
We've received stuff all the time unsolicited. Yeah. I never give my address out, but once one PR person gets it, every PR person gets it.
So
our house is like this embarrassing stack of boxes of unsolicited things, all of which I either give back or donate or send back. We don't accept free things. That's just sort of a flat out old school dinosaur rule that I enforce upon all of our editors, which most people hate.
Oh yeah. What are some of the more ridiculous things that you've received that don't have any relation to Design Sponge itself, like you would never write about or never?
One time years ago, I got baby stuff in the mail. Yeah. That's always the weird thing. For some people who run like baby-based companies, like designer diaper things, don't understand that that is not the same thing as home design.
Yeah.
And they'll try to convince you desperately that it somehow is related to like cutting-edge design. So I think kids stuff tends to pop up more often than not. But people have gotten better because they realize that I just flat out will send it back or say like, I can't use this.
Yeah.
But I think I'm the only one, though. I think most people are like, sweet, I'll take this free stuff.
They treat her like she's crazy. And like the brand, both brands and other bloggers just are always like, wait, you don't want something for free?
Yeah.
But it's not free.
No,
you know,
no.
It's implied that, you know, you're now you sort of owe them a favor.
Yeah, there's some inherent weight that goes along with it.
And it's especially difficult for the niche that I'm in, which is in like sort of independent indie designers. Those people, those giveaways, those freebies they send you, that costs a lot for them. I mean, they really need that one sale. And so that's why I always say, do not send me samples. Your money is better spent somewhere else. And I always advise small businesses that too. Like, someone requests that you send something so that you can evaluate it and then you send it back. That's one thing. But to just send somebody like a stack of pillows and say like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I hope you like them. You know, that sort of stuff happens all the time. So I just try to avoid the situation altogether.
Yeah, we'll talk about the perishables after, because I've had a couple situations where something was sent. I didn't know it was sent. I was away. It rotted. Then they asked me, why didn't I say anything about it? I'm like, well, you sent me rot. And all the,
Well, in different niches, like, I mean, a lot of people who run beauty-based blogs, I mean, like makeup and stuff, you sort of have to try before you write about. Whereas if I see a print, I can sort of tell if I like it off the bat.
Yeah, 2D is sometimes kind of nice. Yeah.
Exactly.
So in about 2006, 2007 is when you started full-time working for Design Sponge. It's funny to say for Design Sponge because it is yours as Design Sponge. Because in 2007, you had written to me, it was kind of a time when design magazines were closing. Which design magazines were lost?
All of them. I mean, other than like, I mean, the big guns are still around, like Elle Decor is still around and Martha Stewart Living and that sort of stuff. But I mean, it tends to be the really high-end ones are still around, or the really sort of mainstream appealing to like Midwestern housewife magazines. All the sort of cool young ones went away. And we were just talking about this online yesterday, that all these new magazines that are popping up, they're calling them just like Domino. And I keep thinking, why don't you just bring Domino back? Yeah. It hasn't been closed that long. Just put it back together.
I love Domino.
So, I mean, I used to write for Domino's website and I wrote for some craft magazines. And the reason I quit my job originally was because I got a full-time freelance job with House and Garden magazine working on their website. And that was amazing. I'm really glad I have that sort of traditional old school magazine experience, even just a couple years of it, because it really informs the way that I run the site. But they're all gone. I mean, all the magazines are gone. Their budgets were bananas. I mean, the cost of the photo shoots at those magazines alone, and then, you know, the petty cash they get for taking cars everywhere. That's stuff that like a blogger would never dream of spending. Yeah. So every dollar we get is very carefully budgeted out to paying people for the work they do. And we never consider like, let's just, you know, take a car and charge everything we possibly can, because it just doesn't seem practical.
Yeah. I was about to ask, how are you different from those big house magazines? And it seems like there is this idea of sustainability, you know, that you inherently know that people need money for other things, or that you need money for other things rather than just, you know, flitting about. That most of what you actually show on your site too is, you know, underneath the ethos of local, sustainable, supportive of the community.
It's a big part of what we do. And I mean, I think that the interesting thing that's different between blogs and magazines is that we really do sort of celebrate the individuals that work with us, because I think magazines are all about the overarching brand. And as much as Design Sponge has become a brand, we really care about the individuals that write for us, because frankly, they're not being paid a lot of money. They're being paid as much as we can humanly possibly afford to give them. But we know that it's not, you know, necessarily as much as they would normally be paid. And so there's a lot of bartering, like, I'll give you this, you give me that, or, you know, whatever we can do.
It's almost medieval.
Yeah, to make their lives easier. We'll promote everything, that their books and anything they're involved in. So I think it's very much about a sort of team effort. And we really try to take advantage of the individual skills that are there and not like smother them with the brand that's above it all.
I think it's funny to think of it as putting the individual back in indie.
It's true.
Yeah. But aside from that, creating these relationships and supporting these people, not just once, but throughout, because you keep on seeing, you know, not just themes, but subjects reappear on your site, because you form these links and bonds. Do you feel like you're still a very ingrained part of the community, or do you feel like you've become larger and more national and broader?
I still feel very much a part of the community. I think one thing Aaron and I were talking about a lot this weekend was I just got back from a design festival in Salt Lake City, of all places, and it was different because it was
the epicenter.
Hotbed of design. Very nice people though. Yeah. And it was the first year where I felt like people didn't come up and say hi to me because they thought like that they shouldn't or couldn't or intimidated. And it was the first year where I felt like the success of the blog hindered the reactions I have with people. And it was just a reminder that I have to get out there more and remind people that just because the site has larger exposure doesn't mean that anybody behind the site is any different at all.
Yeah, they were willing to trek to Roberta's, where we taped the show, in this disgusting weather. So yeah, they are real people gritty people.
We're very, yeah. very real, normal people.
Very gritty.
Yeah, very gritty. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about Design Sponge itself. Enough about you guys. Enough about you guys. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Grace Bonney and Aaron Coles of Design Sponge. It's DesignSpongeOnline.com, right?
It is. Soon to just be .com.
Oh,
we bought the .com finally from some like random squatter that had been stealing it for years.
Yeah. Where were they located?
Well, originally it was a legitimate South Korean design firm that had yes. it back yeah. in like 2003.
Correct.
And then I guess someone had tried to put in a bid and then they won it before we could grab it and we had to buy it back.
But the Korean design firm either gave up the domain or closed.
They went out of business. Yeah.
They went out of business, yeah.
So soon to be designsponge.com. Excellent.
Yeah.
Congrats on that.
Legitimacy. Yeah.
You can still see it if you go to designsponge.com. Yeah. It'll just redirect you to designsponge.online.
But it feels like a triumph to actually get what you've been working for so long.
Well, it was a big difference to move from designsponge.blogspot.com
yeah.
to something else. It was just such a pain to have that extra .blogspot.com at the end of everything.
Yeah. Well, welcome to your own URL. I want to talk about the site because, you know, we've talked about the people behind it, but the site itself is amazing and informative. And I mean, I could give you these descriptors are very akin to that, but it really is. And it's fascinating that it all feels so attainable. And I kind of just want to go through some of the, subject heads, which are like sneak peeks, mini trends, city guides, product guides, DIY, before and after, gift guides. These are pretty much lists that I keep for myself, even before knowing about this, like whether or not they were a mental checklist. How did you come up with these topics? Were they in a similar vein?
It's
pretty organically.
I think everything in the site grows organically. Like we never sit down and think we should really have this topic because it's a topic that's in our industry. Like if I'm not interested in it, I'm not going to do it because your readers know when you're not interested in something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like the food section came out of the fact that I'm like a huge food obsessor and decided, okay, I'll find a way to work this into the community that makes sense. So we started doing recipes with designers.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in the kitchen with aspect soon. I mean, that's not just the limit of food. there are, in the trends, there are, food trends. In the gift guides, there are for your kitchen. And though the majority of the site still kind of geared towards design, interior design, there's a huge food and entertaining part. Mm-hmm. What were some of your initial highlights trying to work that in? Because it seems like initially you were purely design oriented.
Exactly. I mean, we used to be just a straight up product blog. It was just like new thing.
First couple years, yeah.
Exactly. And then it just started to feel like a magalog was the word everybody was using. And I just was tired of
I say that's a terrible word.
I know. Yeah. It's
a
awful.
Very bad
it's
word.
Yeah.
I throw that up there with blogosphere, which I also hate. it just seemed like an unnecessary amount of retail, and I didn't want to be just about like buy this thing. So we expanded into things we were interested in because it's not just a shopping site. It's about sharing cool things that you can integrate into your life in any way, and they just grew naturally. And I like to make things by hand, so I found other people who like to do that, and we share product or project ideas and makeovers and all that sort of stuff. Just grew out of like things we were currently interested in.
Yeah,
I think she also I remember when she started transitioning off of just talking about products specifically, was there became a lot of other sites that started doing sort of the same thing, and it was harder to stand out. It was also harder to keep up with the pace of how many new products come out at any given time. And, you know, she was posting, what, 12, 20 times a day?
Yeah, it was way too
just
much.
Just all the time, and just became more interested in saying, what can I do that's unique? What can I do that's original?
Yeah.
And trying to develop our own content as opposed to, here's the new chair from whoever. Because pretty soon, you could, at a certain point, you could see that chair on 50 sites, and there's really no point to coming to ours.
I know, when something hits like that, it's just regurgitated. And, like, with the advent of Twitter and retweets,
oh, God,
I mean,
yeah,
it's that much easier.
Well, that's what it's like for me. Like, I read a lot of, like, tech sites, or, you know, and if you're reading, like, Engadget or Gizmodo and all, it's pretty soon it's just hard to tell the difference. You know, it's not that they're not all great sites, it's just that you know that if there's a new product, it's going to hit every site.
Yeah.
And I think Grace just got tired of being one of every site.
Proprietary. And that's where I think your personality started shining, though, in that getting away from something that wasn't connected to you, you started, you know, exploring lifestyle, mm-hmm, and, you know, all encompassing. So you could read the site and it's like almost, I was about to say diuretic, but I think that means something else. Like a diary.
Yeah, it definitely means something else.
Yeah. But I mean, like a you know, a day in the life of that you can, you know, use all these new ideas or, you know, new products or, you know, new recipes.
Yeah, I want someone to be able to come to the site and find everything they need for their life. And I mean, we don't get as specific yet as like what you do with, you know, family and children and things like that. But I want you to be able to, like, find a great recipe, find a way to decorate for, like, a birthday party you're throwing for friends, come up with, you know, something cool that you can decorate on your house. Like, I want all those elements to come together so you find them in one place. But the point is that they should be ideas and reference points, not like this attainable, perfect vision of what your life has to be. It has to be something that you can relate to and then customize in your own personal way. Like, I hate when someone hands you something and says, this is what perfect is. Like, do that.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be like that. The new wave of all this design stuff is about finding ways to make it your own.
I think this is an excellent segue into the kitchen with a section of the site where, as you said, recipes with designers. But the overall aesthetic, and this is, you know, as a photo editor and as a photographer, you show those imperfections. You show, you know, the process, not necessarily the hands, but a hand in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was so drawn to the first time I actually saw this work. But it is that great amalgamation of somebody who's tactile and, you know, creative, making something that is replicable but can be, you know, personal.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point, was not to, I mean, some of the recipes do get, like, a bit more complicated or a bit fancier, and for me, I find them just as sort of, like, just food porn, basically.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
just like gorgeous picture, and a lot of the site is just about gorgeous pictures. But
yeah,
Christina Gill, who's our food editor who runs the column, is actually based in Rome, and she's a food photographer herself, and her style is very sort of realistic and relatable and loose and rustic, and she lives in sort of this farmhouse outside of Rome, and so everything is about sort of being loose and imperfect.
Yeah, and of the recipes, a few highlights, a few favorites.
Easy, hands down, most popular recipe we've ever done was a textile designer named Lena Corwin, who lives in Fort Greene, her recipe for cranberry bread. It suddenly became everybody's Christmas or Thanksgiving recipe.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many emails I've gotten where they say, Lena Corwin's cranberry bread is so delicious. And I told Lena one time, and she was so happy and flattered, because it's really amazing when you can make a recipe that suddenly becomes someone else's family's recipe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you feel like you could invite yourself over any time for dinner, right?
Yes, yeah. I mean,
we do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
A recent one about gougères, which, I mean, I love gougères and total
who
sucker.
Doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, a pear tart. What else do we have here? Ooh, Dutch baby pancakes.
We like carbs.
Yeah. Not a bad thing. Not a bad thing. What else are we looking at? Martha Burnaby's pumpkin pancakes.
Delicious. Yeah, I mean, I think lately we've been working with a lot of Australian food people, designers, photographers, to try to sort of bring in influences that aren't so expected for your average American reader. So I think that's been interesting to see how people react to ingredients or styles or traditions that aren't something they immediately relate to.
What are some of these foreign, you know, ingredients and aesthetics that you're
trying to plan? Well, one thing which is super, I think, totally normal in big cities now. I remember we had a recipe for Guinness cake the other day from an Australian food photographer, and she used to work with who's the girl? Oh, I see. The British.
Katie Quinn.
Yes,
Katie Quinn Davies. Yeah,
amazing photographer. And that was something that people immediately in the comment sections were like, "That's disgusting. Why would you put beer in something?" We're like, "No, you're missing the point. And it's delicious. And we had it the other night at the Vinegar Hill House and outside of Dumbo, and it was amazing. And I think it's something that's slowly working its way in.
Sticky toffee pudding. People didn't know what that was in New York.
Exactly.
Yeah, those Brits, there's this concept that they don't know their food. Lead yourself in with dessert and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and we've done some like great Mexican cookie recipes with food bloggers and people in Los Angeles. And those things always initially to people seem confusing for some reason. And then as soon as they make them and try them, they're delicious and they find something or some way to relate it to something they grew up with.
Yeah.
So it's just about trying and encouraging people to like reach outside of their comfort zone a little bit.
And you mentioned Australia. Is that a trend or is that just a region? Oceania that you're trying to draw more from?
I think it's sort of an obsession of mine. I think that I feel a real kindred spirit with people, especially in Melbourne, because I think that they have a very similar style to Brooklyn right now, and all of the readers we have in Australia, I just feel like we're all the same, but we're separated by an insane amount of ocean. And so we're going on a book tour next year for our book that's coming out this fall. And Australia was the first place I thought of that. I said, I don't care if we can't find any sponsorship or support from the publisher to go there. We're going there because those are our people.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to try to give more exposure to that area in some way, because I think that there are a lot of amazing designers there. But because of the distance and the way that stores don't ship back and forth that often, they just sort of get, they get cut off. And so I think that if we have a platform to, celebrate them a bit more, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and bring some, Kiwis are New Zealand, and then bring some kangaroos, koalas back? I don't know. Yeah.
If it fits in my suitcase,
New book?
Yes.
Let's touch on that. Yeah.
First ever book. Hardest thing I've ever done, hands down. We have a huge, 400 plus page book coming out this fall called Design Sponge at Home, which is a celebration of the three most popular sections of the site: house tours, do-it-yourself projects, and makeovers.
Yeah.
And so we have half of it's new and half of it's the greatest hits from the book. And it's packed with these little sections of basic primers. So all the things you need to know about installing wallpaper and lighting and how to arrange flowers, everything you could possibly need to know about getting your house to look the way you want it to look is inside the book.
Do you have a DIY section on how to write a book about that?
Oh, God, no. We do have a Biz Ladies post about how to write a book, though.
Yeah.
We do have posts about that.
And did you follow all the advice in that post when you were writing the book?
No, I think I probably did the exact opposite of everything the post told me.
Well, someone has to do that to figure out all the wrong that, you just do the exact opposite.
Yeah, I think that's my lesson or mission in life is to always, I do all the wrong things first.
Yeah.
Learn how to do
goofy and gallant.
It is usually how you come up with the best lessons for the Biz Lady series is by teaching based on mistakes that we've made.
I'm the test dummy.
It's really, that's how everything I've learned that has really stuck with me is usually based on something I did wrong at some point.
So maybe your second book could be all the things that I did wrong and how to stray away.
How all not to build a website.
That second book is going to be way shorter. That's all I know.
So I want to know a covet list from you, because I'm sure everybody goes on your site and says, ooh, I want that, I want that. I bet you have thousands of tabs and bookmarks in everybody's computer, but what do you want? What do you look at and just yearn?
I actually don't have covet lists like that. Everyone thinks I'm a liar when I say that, but I have maybe one folder of things on my desktop, and right now I'm obsessed with I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, it's either Kalim or Kilim rugs. It's a traditional rug from the Middle East. It's amazing, beautiful flat woven rugs. They're thousands of dollars, but I'm tucking away money to try to buy one when we move into a new apartment. So I have files of those saved from different stores across the world where I want to try to buy one. But other than that, running a blog like this means your brain is 24/7 just flooded with images. The last thing I want to do is stockpile more images. So I try to just declutter my mind at the end of the day and stay away from the idea of bookmarking anything else.
It's just designsponge.com all the time on your computer. Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's what my head is. My head is Design Sponge times 25 at all times.
Yeah, and you said 24/7. How many employees do you have now?
As of next week, there will be three of us full-time. Aaron and I both work full-time, and we're bringing on our senior editor, Amy, full-time. And then we have a group of 20 freelancers that contribute one column a week or one column a month, whatever they have time for.
Yeah, and in 2003-04...
Just one.
Yeah, but did you see this? Did you see, 20 stringers, three full-time?
No, I didn't want anyone else to write for
it.
I was really, really protective of the site, because namely because I didn't want to have to tell anybody else that I thought they should change the way they wrote, or they had, I just didn't feel like I wouldn't want to be anyone's editor, and I had to sort of get over that because it was for the benefit of the site and the readers to have other people of interesting things to say on the site. And I had to learn that it's okay to be a boss and to try to be the best boss you can.
Delegation is tough. But yeah. Speaking of interesting people, there's tons of them, interesting things, thousands of them. Go to Design Sponge. I'm sure you already have. I'm sure your girlfriend's already told you about it. Check it out. Grace, Aaron, thank you so much for being on
the
food
scene. Thanks so much for having
me.
Thank you. Yeah. And again, designsponge.com. Excellent. Congrats.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Hearst Rands for sponsoring. Jack Inslee, our executive producer, and hope to have you here next Tuesday at 3. I'm Michael Harlan, Turk Bell, and you've been listening to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.